Hello there.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Nerdolitics on Fred Hampton Leftist. This is the first official episode of Nerdolitics, and I'm joined by my co-host, Meg Killjoy Meg. And today, our special guest is Ryan Knight. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, everybody. Hey, thank you. Thank you both for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. We're excited to have you.
Indeed. And you are a Star Wars fan, yes?
I am a Star Wars fan. I grew up watching the original trilogy. I'm a huge fan of, you know, Luke Skywalker and, well, the Ewoks are my favorite. By the time we get to Return of the Jedi and like the Ewoks are one of the central characters in the story arc, I loved it. And my dad actually lived in Alaska. And my mom lived in Seattle. So I'd go back and forth. And in my dad's house in Alaska, he lived literally like in this forest in a small town called Petersburg in a log cabin. And I would just run around the forest and like pretending I was an Ewok. And I thought it was really cool. And yeah, Star Wars was like my escape from, you know, reality during my childhood. Loved it. And yeah, I still love it to today.
I think Star Wars is definitely a generational thing because I think for everybody who's Gen X, Ewoks were awesome. Because we were little kids and we were like, oh, they're cute, cuddly little murder bears. Aren't they adorable? And adults were like, that's some stupid shit. And like kids now, like people who weren't kids when that came out, they look at it and they're like, that's the dumbest part of Star Wars. And I'm like, but wait, Porgs are coming. Right. Don't forget Jar Jar. Because that's way dumber than Ewoks. At least Ewoks. Yeah. We're cute, cuddly little murder bears.
Thank you. What are they talking? What are they hating on our Ewoks for? You guys got Jar Jar. We had the Ewoks,
right?
Yeah. That came. Phantom Menace came out when I was in like middle school. So,
thanks for making us feel old because I was an adult. So,
and I'm a millennial. I think I'm at the older upper range in the millennials, but I am still.
Yeah. I'm like right in the middle.
A millennial.
Yeah.
I am the tail end of Gen Z. Gen X. Wrong one. The other way. I'm the tail end of Gen X. So Gen X is the best. We're also the forgotten ones. You know why we're forgotten? Because we shut the fuck up. We're really good at that.
And you're the latchkey kids, you know? You're just kind of out on there on your own.
So fun fact, our generation is known as being latchkey kids, but my mother was very domineering. And so I used to wish that I was a latchkey kid because she was like physically there just all the time. And I was like, can you leave? Go somewhere. And she was like, no. So that explains a lot. All right. So Star Wars, what did you want to cover about Star Wars? We're getting all personal and shit.
I mean, one thing that I just kind of comparing it to our politics that I find interesting is, well, especially, you know, while Trump was president, liberals, claim they were the resistance. Mm-hmm. But it kind of turns out like what we're finding out now that Trump is no longer president, and Joe Biden is now president, that the liberals really weren't resisting anything because, you know, when Trump, who they would probably equate to Darth Vader, when Trump was in power and he was putting kids in cages and he was dropping bombs on Syria. And when he was, you know, putting corporations over people and, you know, maintaining our decrepit capitalist system, liberals were outraged. But now we see Joe Biden is the one in charge of the empire, and he is the one putting kids in cages, and he's the one dropping bombs on Syria, and he's the one maintaining our decrepit capitalist system. And liberals are not outraged. And I think for me, what kind of just the whole idea of power in general, you know, I think that, in Star Wars, right, they beat Darth Vader, and then kind of what happens? It's like, this whole idea for me of power, it's like you don't defeat the bad guy and then just become rulers of the empire, because power corrupts, and anyone that wants to rule over an empire is corrupt. And I think for me, the idea is power should be about, if you have power, that you should be trying to put power into the hands of the working people and into the hands of all the people. And that to me is kind of like what a system like socialism that I advocate for is like, is it's like breaking up the power of the empire and of this mighty government and of these giant corporations and of the, you know, oligarchs of the world like Jeff Bezos, and saying, nobody's free when we're living under capitalist rule and oligarchic rule and living under the quote unquote evil empire. We're free when the people have own the means of production, when they control the giant corporations, when we have, you know, committees of worker committees. And because I believe that, you know, workers will make better decisions for our society than a single CEO like Jeff Bezos, who has $200 billion and is making decisions based on how many yachts and houses he can accumulate. And so just kind of the whole idea of Star Wars, looking at it kind of from a broad picture of, you know, it's really a fight against, you know, the dark side and the light side. But I think that liberals think that, you know, Republicans are the dark side and they're the Jedi and they're the light side. But I don't actually feel that way. I feel like the both conservatives and liberals are both, they're like in this battle with each other to see who can rule over people and rule over the empire. And as long as is that's your goal in politics, is just to win elections so you can control the American empire, you're just exploiting people in the working class, both here in our country and abroad. I don't know if any of that made sense.
No, it did. What it reminded me of is, I know you wanted to stick to the originals, but in the prequels, remember the war, like the separatist war, mm-hmm. where you had like the separatist and the Republic? I feel like that is a good picture of where our politics is now, where you have the separatist side and the Republic, and they're fighting a war that it turns out is a bullshit war because both sides are being controlled by Palpatine.
Right.
I feel like that's what Democrats and Republicans are. They're the same thing. They're both being controlled by Palpatine. And I think in real life, Palpatine is the military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. That's who is the overall overseer. And the president is just the position of Darth Vader. It's just the person that they put, or not even Darth Vader. The president is more like a Grand Moff. Mm-hmm. Like the president would be like Grand Moff Tarkin. And they're like Vader would be our military itself, because he does the bidding of the chancellor, later on emperor, and he's like the brute force to get everything done. And that's pretty much what our military and police are. So I feel like our military and police are actually Darth Vader. The president is nothing more than like Grand Moff Tarkin. Mm. And then the Democrats and Republicans are fighting this war that is entirely meaningless because both sides are controlled by the same person.
Yeah. And also, like, when they're fighting their war, it's like whoever wins the election every 4 years, essentially, they're just in charge of the American empire. Right.
Yeah,
and what does the American empire do? Yeah. The American empire continues to exploit the working class, at home here to enrich the billionaire class. And they also, you know, continue to exploit the poor and the working class abroad through, you know, crippling economic sanctions and through these endless wars, where they go in and invade and bomb and then exploit the natural resources of other countries to just enrich the oligarchy back here at home. And I just always find it funny how liberals, and when I say liberals, I used to be a liberal for almost 18 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about myself. You know, I was under the spell, if you will, of the empire. And I was under the control of the empire, where essentially, you know, I thought I was fighting the good fight. And, oh, if we just vote, you know, vote blue, if we just elect a bunch of Democrats to, you know, be in charge of the empire, then things will be different in this country for the people. Well, it turns out, no, you're just replacing, you know, one capitalist imperialist party with another capitalist imperialist party that just wants to dominate and control over people instead of giving the people more power and freedom in their lives. I kind of look at, you know, now I would consider myself a socialist. Again, I believe that the most democratic style of governance is for the people to have as much power and control over their own lives. And for me, that won't happen until the people actually own the means of production, until the people are own and operate the economy and not these kind of the billionaire class with the help of, right, these two capitalist parties that the billionaire class owns now. And so I kind of believe that, you know, the Jedi, the ones that are kind of, you know, using the force to set balance into the empire, I kind of feel like socialists and communists and, you know, lefties, true leftists are kind of like the Jedi. And they're kind of fighting to kind of, you know, put power back in the hands of the people, while both parties are like, no, you got to be, be afraid of the Jedi. The Jedi are bad, you know, socialists bad. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but for me, it's about like, what are you doing with your power? And I just don't see either party in Washington, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, I don't see them doing anything with their power except giving more power to the giant corporations and to the billionaire class and stripping power away from the people, and especially working class people and marginalized people, right? Black, brown, indigenous people. And I think that, you know, we have to set things right in our world again and bring balance to the bring force. Balance to the force. Bring balance to the force. And there's
our Anakin.
Yeah, there is no balance. I mean, right now the capitalists have all the power. The empire has all the power. The billionaires have all the power. There's no balance whatsoever. And I feel like in order to get just a little bit of balance, you have to fight for everything, right? You have to fight for socialism, which is an entire program, which is about putting power into the hands of the working class. You can't, you know, some people who think they're Jedis, which I would call liberals, they kind of want to fight from a more watered down position. You know, they're trying to go up against the empire with, you know, kind of like a social democracy platform. But liberals and the Democratic Party have been trying to fight for social democracy for almost 100 years now. And this capitalist system is more rigged than ever against the working class, right? 3 billionaires now own more wealth than half of our entire nation. We now have 140 million Americans who are poor or low income. That's almost half of our country. And so when we live in historic economic times and these liberals have been fighting for social democracy for 100 years, I think it's pretty reasonable to come to the conclusion that fighting for social democracy is not working. And that if we actually fight for full-on socialism and we tell the empire and we tell the capitalists that we want to control the means of production, we're coming for everything, that's going to scare the shit out of Jeff Bezos. It's going to scare the shit out of the empire and both corporate parties. And they're going to be a lot more willing to negotiate with us if we come from a power of strength. But this kind of watered-down position the liberals want to fight with just hands more power to both capitalist parties and more power to Jeff Bezos and more power to to the empire and to our government. And so we sit here waiting on a hero, but I think we're all the heroes. I think that's the other realization, right? That we're all the Jedi. I just, people haven't tapped into the force yet. They haven't tapped into the fact that they can be a Jedi for, you know, social justice and racial justice and economic justice and for socialism, if they wake up and realize that.
You know, go ahead.
You know what's really funny about the fact that you're saying that people think that they're Jedis, is if you even look at in the prequels, whenever the war started happening, the Separatist War, like you had, why can't I think of his name right now? The Jedi who became the Separatist leader. Why can't I think of his name? Windu. No, not Windu. Come.
No.
That's Samuel Jackson. Why can't I think of his name right now? Dooku.
Dooku. I was just about to say.
Dooku. Okay. Dooku.
Dooku.
Count Dooku.
And, but it kind of makes me think about the fact that he separated. And even Qui-Gon Jinn, he was kind of up against the council, because the council were a bit incrementalist. They were very fearful and they were aiding the empire during this war because they were fighting the battle. So really, when you think about it, they are very much those liberals who are like, you know, no, we're the good guys. We're the good guys. But they're literally helping the establishment.
Right.
I think Bernie is Yoda.
A little bit.
Because here's the thing. If you look at like all of Star Wars, right? Yoda's journey, like especially including the Clone Wars. In the Clone Wars, he figured out everything that was coming. He knew that it was, he knew about Palpatine. He didn't know about Palpatine, but he knew Sidious. He knew Darth Sidious was coming. He didn't know that Palpatine was Darth Sidious, but he knew that he was there, and he knew that he was trying to get to him through Anakin. And he knew that they were going to use the clones to turn against him, which is why he was so quick as soon as it happened. And he figured all this out, and he even said the only way for the Jedi to have actually won was to never get in. We never should have fought. You know, we're supposed to be peacekeepers. We never should have been generals in a war. And yet, despite knowing it and despite, you know, being actively helping throughout the whole thing, when he realizes just how far gone it is, he sees down the road and he pulls back. Instead of trying to stop the events from happening, he's like, the events have to happen. And he just lets them happen. And then he helps the next generation to actually defeat the Empire. And I feel like that's what Bernie's been doing.
I would say that I think that's a fair argument to say that, you know, Bernie is Yoda. I mean, if there's no Bernie Sanders, I don't become a socialist, and I never radicalize at all and kind of wake up to the fact that we're living under, you know, a capitalist state that just continues to exploit the labor of the poor and the working class to enrich the ruling class. And I probably would have never woken up to the fact that, yeah, the problem isn't Democrats or Republicans. The problem is our capitalist system. That is, in essence, the entire problem. And it continues to feed the empire. It continues to feed the rich. And it continues to exploit, you know, like I said earlier, the people in this nation and the poor and the working class across the world. I would add, though, that, you know, while Bernie maybe is Yoda, I think that I think that a lot of the people he's trained, if you will, or taught now, we're becoming a little bit more radical than our master, if you will, or we're becoming a little more radical than Bernie, because I think in many ways, well, Bernie's the pioneer in the sense that he brought, you know, kind of radical politics, socialist politics back into the mainstream. And I think now a lot of us are kind of picking it up and saying, well, that's great, Bernie, but maybe you were a little too kind, you know, to the empire, a little too kind to the Democrats, who kind of pose as they're on the side of justice while they're actually maintaining these unjust capitalist systems and the unjust policing system. And that we need to move beyond the Democratic Party. We need to break free from both of these capitalist parties and build power for our own. But yeah, I would definitely say that saying Bernie is Yoda is fair. I think another thing we have to talk about is the fact that Luke Skywalker in real life, the actor who portrayed him, he might be a Jedi in the films, but in real life,
nah, he's a liberal.
His name Mark is Hamill. Mark Hamill is no Luke Skywalker in real life. He's no socialist Jedi in real life. He is a neoliberal who just continues to think that, you know, his entire political overview is Republicans bad, Democrats good. And I think that is, for me, as someone who that was probably my political overview for a very long time until I finally woke up a few years ago to realize that, no, yeah, well, sure, Republicans are bad, but Democrats are bad too. We're actually, both parties have been overcome by the dark side, and both parties serve the empire. And serve the ruling class and serve the oligarchy, and so if we want to overcome that, we have to stop pretending like the Democrats are the good guys, because they're not. And in some ways, they're actually more sinister than the Republicans, because they kind of pretend like they're the good guys, and then, you know, they get power and they stab the working class and the poor and the marginalized communities in the back, and then they just, you know, continue to govern for the ruling class and continue the endless wars and continue our unjust economic system and our policing system. And so, you know, I think that it's just kind of ironic to me that, you know, he might be a Jedi in the films, but in real life, yeah, he's just a neoliberal who wants to continue to get power for one party and not put power back into the hands of the people. And that's...
So, Meg, what do you think about all of that?
it definitely makes sense to me, because especially when you look at, say, Clone Wars, and when Ahsoka is down in the pit, you know, she's wondering, like, you know, where are the Jedi? And they're telling her, what Jedi? The Jedi have never done anything good for our lives. What's the point of them? They're not here. They're just making life a little bit harder for us, if anything. So it's exactly to Ryan's point. It's like, what exactly have Democrats done for us lately? Like, they're not helping. They're just being basically covert in how they're oppressing us as well.
Ooh, okay. New analogy. The Jedi, the Democrats are the Jedi, but then the Republicans are the Sith, right? But not the way people think, because people think like light versus dark, good versus bad.
Right.
But they're the Jedi and the Sith in the prequels before the Jedi went down. So when you really look at it, like the way Anakin was looking at the Jedi and the Sith, he looked at it like the Jedi. Remember that line, like, from my point of view, the Jedi are the ones in the wrong?
Like, Anakin, right. They're evil. From
yeah.
my point of view, the Jedi are evil. It's like,
yeah.
You are lost. So, like, yes. No, he's not lost, actually.
He's not. And that's the thing. Yoda later realized he was right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the way, like, if you look at Luke Skywalker in just the original trilogy, because that's the end of Luke Skywalker's story. We don't know what happens after that, except that he came in and helped Grogu. Maybe we'll get some sequels one day. So when you look at the story of Luke Skywalker, right. He wanted to be a Jedi like his father before him. And then he found out the harsh truth that the Jedi were not what he thought. So he studied the Jedi, but he decided to do things his own way. So like in Legends, because that's much better than the sequel trilogy. In Legends, he actually went against the Jedi's order of no relationships. Mm-hmm. And he got married, had kids. He trained Jedi, not as infants like the Jedi originally did. He waited until they were a little bit older, because the Jedi were like, you have to start when you're 2 or 3, when you first start showing force powers or force abilities, because we don't want you to form attachments to your parents. The two people that like you should have attachments to. No. We don't want you to have attachments to your parents. And they actually blamed Anakin turning to the dark side on the fact that he was like 9 when they started training him. 9. Like, and that kind of reminds me of like Neo in The Matrix. Then he was like an adult and they were like, he's too old. We should have pulled him younger. And I'm like, what are you out here taking kids? What the hell's going on, man? Yeah, like the indoctrination is powerful.
Yeah.
Well, even and I like Spartans waited till they were 7.
I like what you said about, oh, so they're not really what I thought they were, you know, because, and that was really my big epiphany as a, you know, as a lifelong Democrat forever. I thought, well, the Democrats are the, you know, they are the Force. They're the Jedis. And I think that, you know, as we see, you know, the Empire tries to divide, you know, the world is, you know, is the Sith or the Jedi, right? And in our world, you know, in the United States, the oligarchy and the government, they want to divide people, right? You're either the blue team or the red team, you know? And I think that misses kind of the nuance and the complexities of the human condition. I don't think that anyone is all good or all bad. You know, everyone has good in them and bad in them. And it's about which side, you know, which side you try to bring out, which side are you working on, which side. And so I think that, and this whole idea of like separating, and this is how they control us, right? Divide and conquer. You know, they split us into these two parties. You're the red party or the blue party. And each party thinks they're saving the country. And the rhetoric was so heated up, especially for the 2020 election, that I was laughing one day, like a week before the election between Biden and Trump. There was literally a tweet on Twitter from a Democrat. And then right underneath it was from a Republican. And the Democrat was like, you've got to go and vote for Joe Biden to save democracy, or Republicans are going to destroy this country. And then the next tweet, literally right underneath it, was a Republican saying, you have to vote for Donald Trump or Democrats are going to destroy democracy and destroy this country. And they both had the same message. It was just, you know, it was just that they think their team is the one who's going to save the country and the other team is going to destroy it. Well, the truth is both parties, the red and the blue team, are destroying the country for everyday working class people and just giving more power to the billionaire class. And so this whole idea of dividing us in these two teams, I think is so antiquated. And I think we need to break out of this kind of red and blue thinking. And I also just think, like, you know, in such a vast world that we live in such a beautiful world, how is the best we can do in the United States of America two parties that both serve the interests of capital and both serve the interests of the ruling class? You know, how is the best we can do in the United States of America an economic system and capitalism that is rigged against the poor and the working class and exploits the labor of the poor and the working class to enrich the ruling class? How is that the best we can do? And the truth is, it's not the best we can do. We can do so much better. But they tell us that this is as good as it could ever be, because that's how they keep us locked into the system. And that's how they get us to obey. And that's how they prevent us from fighting for anything better. And so for me, the first step in any kind of and any kind of activist or any kind of program that's going to truly improve this country and this world for the people is understanding that we've got to break out of this old antiquated thinking and break out of this kind of, you know, red versus blue mindset and get into the fact that it's really the 99%. It's really the people versus the oligarchy, right? And that's what we have to do, and look for ways to bring the people together. And, you know, you really don't see that much in the Star Wars film, right? It's always, you know, it's always the Jedi battling the dark side of the Force and battling over control, really, of the universe and of the Empire. And the same thing kind of in America. It's the Democrats and Republicans battling over who gets to control the Empire. And I think that the idea would be is, like, do we need an empire, right? Do we need to have a government that wages endless war against the world, and now with our police forces waging wars against our own people, and predominantly, you know, working class and black people and brown people? And so that's kind of where I like to think. I just like to think about getting outside of that kind of small thinking, because if we don't, we're just 100 years from now, we'll still be having the same fight. It'll be red versus blue.
If we're still here.
If there's even a planet left to fight for. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
I highly doubt that there will be people left in 100 years if we keep doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of crazy too, because there, it's just as you were saying, it's like, we need to save democracy by voting red. We have to save democracy by voting blue. It's like, well, either way, this is how democracy dies, with thunderous applause.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the truth is, we never had democracy.
Yeah, we don't.
The war profiteers on Canto Bight, they'll profit either way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The thing is, like, I've been hearing that story since I was a kid.
Right.
You have to vote for whoever the chosen candidate is. That's why so many people just don't even pay attention to the electoral process until it's time to push the button for red or blue, because they're like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. Like, the oligarchy is going to put up who they want. And they're right.
Yeah,
they're right. Because Bernie won the first three states outright. And even though he technically lost the fourth one, he lost by a very, very slim margin. He still would have won. He still, like, there's no reason he didn't sweep all, like, not necessarily every single state, but let's face it, the first state that he lost was a heavily Republican state. It's the South.
Yep.
So, okay, I'm surprised that he didn't win, that the guy who's the furthest left on the ticket didn't somehow take a red state. Color me shocked. But he took the other ones, and he was set to take all the rest. And then they come in and they're just like, nah, we're going to put our finger on the scale. We're not going to let that happen. And, like,
that part is what people don't want to accept, because
they put their finger on the scale
the finger on the scale. And the way they did it, and this is all reported through the media, which just drives me crazy. And sorry to interrupt you, but it, you, when you say, I think what people don't realize is the DNC did put its finger on the, their, its thumb on the scale. And let me tell you how they did it. They had Barack Obama 3 days before Super Tuesday, 3 days before the, that Tuesday that was going to decide who the candidate would eventually be and who the nominee for the Democratic ticket would be. And they had Barack Obama make two phone calls. He made a phone call to Pete Buttigieg and he made a phone call to Amy Klobuchar. And he told both Pete and Amy that they needed to get out of the race and endorse Joe Biden to clear the lane for him on Super Tuesday. Now, if Obama doesn't make those two phone calls and Pete and Amy are still in the race on Super Tuesday, Bernie hands down wins Super Tuesday and becomes the nominee of the party and essentially changes the course of history and of the Democratic Party. And we have a chance to have democracy in this country. We have a chance to get corporate money out of our politics. We have a chance to have justice and dignity for the poor and the working class and for marginalized communities. The very communities that the Democratic Party claims to care about. But instead, what the DNC did and what they're going to do every time is protect corporate power. And that is why Obama makes those phone calls to clear the way for the Joe Biden. And they're going to do that again in 2024 and they'll do it again in 2028. They will rig it for a Kamala Harris or a Pete Buttigieg. And they sinisterly use kind of identity politics and use someone like, you know, I'm a gay man. And so they'll use like a Pete Buttigieg to say like, oh, look, we care about the LGBTQ community, to give them power. And then what someone like Pete will do is he'll just kind of say all these nice platitudes and say he cares about the poor and the working class and marginalized communities, and then just govern for Wall Street and giant corporations and protect the corporate donors that keep the DNC running. And so that is the entire purpose of the Democratic Party. It's to cater to their corporate donors. It's to preserve our decrepit capitalist system and to stop any real movement to the left. And they're just going to keep doing this over and over again until we wake up. You know, well, we've kind of already woken up and we're now trying to help people wake up. But it's but our platforms, you know, Jackie and Meg and me, we need bigger platforms. And we're going up against the CNNs and MSNBCs of the world who have these, who reach millions of people and are just telling them, no, you're good. Vote for the Buttigieg's, vote for the Kamala Harris's, vote for the Obamas. That's change. And it's not change because it's just really putting a more friendly face in charge of the oligarchy and in charge of the capitalist system. But no true change actually does take place. And yes, people are kind of waking up to it. I woke up a year and a half ago, but we're not waking up quick enough. And so I just get really nervous on what's going to be next. Like, you know, I don't know, Jackie. I don't know.
Well, I can tell you one thing.
Star Wars meets the Matrix.
Yeah, I can definitely tell you one thing. I mean, look at what happened between the Return of the Jedi and the Force Awakens. First Order took power because the resistance completely collapsed. That's exactly what's going to happen. The resistance is going to collapse and we're going to get the First Order. The next fascist leader is going to be better. He's going to be a little bit more competent than Trump. And that's what's going to happen. The resistance has already collapsed. They're sending out the beacon. Nobody's coming. Nobody's coming to rescue you.
And many would argue that that's already happening. I mean, many would argue. I mean, look at how the Democratic Party is now trying to censor and trying to censor free speech. Yes. Look how they're trying to now pass laws across this country to silence protesters and take, you know, the right to protest away. You know, many would argue that Joe Biden is, you know, he's a blue fascist. He's a blue Trump. It's you me. Know, the kids I'm are the still many. In. The kids are in cages. The wars are continuing. You know, they lied to us and told us that they're pulling out of Afghanistan. No, they're not. They're withdrawing 2,500 troops. But what they're not telling us is that they're keeping 1,500 off the book special forces, and they're keeping 18,000 contractors in Afghanistan, which are really mercenaries. And so instead of ending the war, they've just privatized the war. And so everything's really staying the same. But they're just giving like a fancier PR message and the corporate media. So what scares me about Joe Biden and why I think in many ways it's almost scarier than Trump is that he's like Trump, But with the entire corporate media on his side, and with liberals, whoa, I just spit. I got too excited, Ryan. And so he's got the corporate media on his side, and he's got the entire liberals, all liberals on their side, on his side. And so in that way, he can be more dangerous than Trump, because the rich will just keep getting richer. We're seeing, think of it this way. We are in a time of massive levels of racial injustice and economic inequality, and the Democratic Party controls the entire government, the House, the Senate, and the White House. And they're not even fighting for strong social reforms. They're not fighting for Medicare for all. They're not fighting for, you know, a $24 an hour living wage. They're not even fighting for the $15 minimum wage, which was the compromise. They're not fighting for monthly universal basic income. They're not fighting for a true reparations bill. They're not fighting for universal college, canceling all of student debt. They're fighting for like tiny little small, you know, bandages. You know, the American Rescue Plan that gave people one-time checks. That's not going to cut it. And so when the party that calls itself Democratic won't even fight for strong social reforms in a moment when there's this much inequality, it means we're in serious trouble. And that's what I just, more people need to wake up to. It's like the Democrats aren't even fighting for reforms. And that should, but what they do is they tell you they are, or and they sedate you with all these platitudes, and that confuses just enough comfortable liberals. And what it really does is it affects people at the margins. It really hurts the poor and the working class and communities of color, the very communities the Dems say they care about. And that's what's really unfortunate about all of this.
Mm-hmm. And what they don't even understand is that Democrats are not even reformers. They're not revolutionaries. No. They're not reformers. They're managers. That's what their function is. All they're supposed to do is just manage the empire. Make sure the status quo doesn't change. Yep. Make sure everything is just copacetic, but don't rock the boat. We're just managing the situation. They're not going to fix anything. They're not reformers.
You just nailed it. I've never heard it put that way. You're absolutely right. They're not reformers. They're not revolutionaries. They're managers. Brilliant.
Indeed.
Thank you.
That was brilliant.
I have a good moment here and there.
Yay, Meg's moment. Okay, so going back to Star Wars. So Obi-Wan was supposed to be the only hope, but then he died. And he kind of helped Luke. Luke was really the hope. But my question is, do we have a Luke in real life?
I think we did, and this might be controversial, but I think that, you know, a lot of us thought that AOC would kind of inherit the reins and take the reins from Bernie and kind of lead the progressive movement. But over the past few months, we haven't really seen her lead the progressive movement, right? She's giving grassroots donations to corporate Democrats, and she's calling socialists bad faith actors. And she's, you know, she's kind of apologizing and defending the corrupt establishment instead of fighting back against the corrupt establishment, which she was sent there to do. And so I think that we're in a time, like I would literally say that the left right now is, you kind of got the AOC left, and you've got what I call the no worshiping politicians left. And I'm definitely part of the no worshiping politicians left. And I think that when you say, is there a hero? I think we have to be the heroes. I think we can have a guide. I think we can have someone who does lead. But I think that the person who leads has to be responsive to the movement and has to be willing to take criticism from the movement. And we can't put another politician above the movement and above the policies that we're fighting for. So as soon as AOC, you know, and the squad kind of backed off Medicare for all, you know, that was the moment. And a lot of us were holding her accountable. Jackie and you, I've seen you, Meg, out there, and all of Fred Hampton leftists, you guys have done a brilliant job of just saying, like, why aren't you guys fighting for Medicare for all? Why aren't you taking the fight to Pelosi, to Joe Biden, you know, to the Democratic establishment? Remember, the Democratic establishment, they don't work for the people. They work for Wall Street and giant corporations. And so if we're ever going to have any victories for working people in this country, those victories won't happen if you're playing patty cakes with the corrupt establishment. They only happen if you are willing to be brave enough to take on the establishment. And what we're seeing from AOC and the squad, and Bernie to a lesser degree now, is they're not willing to have an open clash with Joe Biden and the corrupt establishment. And we're seeing politicians like Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema and even the Pelosi's of the world unapologetically fight for the capitalist class and for big business. And we're not seeing kind of the progressives do that. And so what we need is everyone to understand that we are all the heroes, that we all have to be accountable to each other, but that if we have a leader who leads us, we have to be able to hold them accountable, that no politician is above reproach, and we have to demand better from our leaders. And right now, we're not seeing that. And I think the AOC left thinks that we're the ones who are being divisive, but we're just the ones that are, we're just standing by our principles. And we're saying, look, we saw what happened with Obama. You know, he campaigned like a leftist, campaigned on hope and change.
Yep.
Then he pivoted to the right and governed for Wall Street. Now we're kind of seeing that same thing, unfortunately, happen with AOC. And if you don't hold her accountable, she'll just keep moving to the right even more. And that's what I think they don't realize, that it's actually a good thing. If there's any hope that AOC can be the true progressive firebrand that we need her to be if she wants to lead the left, then it requires her being open enough to take criticism and learn from that and become better from that. That's how politicians don't change when you sing Kumbaya and you worship them. Politicians change and do the right thing when you hold their feet to the fire and you hold them accountable. But we live in kind of this hero worship society that just wants to treat politicians like celebrities and worship them. And so they just get away with not, you know, going to the mat and fighting for these policies that they campaign on. And that's just not acceptable.
I have a candidate for being our Luke.
Ooh,
who? Wall Street Bets. Because they took this, they like attacked the system from within. Mm-hmm. And like so many people got into the stock market just because they found a way in, and they were like, just like Luke when in Star Wars, the original Star Wars, because that's what it's called. just like Luke, when he was going down and like he made that impossible shot, Wall Street Bets found the hole. They're the ones who were like, or maybe they're Mon Mothra. They're the ones who were like, hey, here's the weakness that we could exploit.
They did it was like a nice moment, right? It was like for 2 weeks. But
until the system fought back.
The system like fought back. The system, all of a sudden you had Republicans talking about regulation, which is just so ironic because their entire concept is, no, we need to unregulate the markets and let Wall Street do whatever the hell it wants. Well, the moment Main Street, you know, learns how to play the game that the ruling class is playing, and the Main Street learns how to make some money for themselves, is the very moment that Wall Street wants to start to regulate. And they're like, no, that's not how the stock market works. The stock market is only for the rich to get richer, sillies. It's not for you poor people to do this. So I would agree that they kind of shook it up for a minute. But I also think that like you can't beat the master with the master's tools. You know, we're not gonna just completely dismantle this corrupt system by playing their game. We got to play a different game. We've got to work outside of their system and show people that a better world is possible, right? That we don't have to live in a decrepit capitalist system that exploits the poor to enrich the ruling class. That we could have an economy that does work for everyone. That we could have a society where that the bedrock of society it is about justice and equality and dignity for all people. Because what we have under capitalism is not that. You know, we have an economy right now and an economic system which concentrates the majority of the wealth in a society in the hands of a very small few by exploiting the labor of the many. And that's not democratic at all. There's actually nothing democratic about capitalism. What we have to do is shift society into a more socialist type economy where the workers own and operate and control the economy. And so I think that's what we have to do. And I think the more people see that kind of an economy could work, the more that they'll run, get away from this old economy that's not working. And I also think that it's going to come to a point where just the levels of inequality just continue. The middle class keeps shrinking, right? And so I think sometimes people are just so like kind of living in the now, which is fine. You know, they're just living in, okay, we got the 2020 election. You know, we just, this is Trump Biden. And they're not realizing that like the path that this nation and that the path that capitalism is on right now is just unsustainable. And it's a path towards annihilation. And that you just cannot have an economy where, you know, in the 80s, there wasn't, you know, you didn't have three billionaires hoarding half the wealth in this country. And so the way it's going is just, they're just going to be getting more and more money up here. And we're all going to be left getting poorer and poorer. And it's really just turning into the Hunger Games. I mean, it's going to become a dystopian society unless we bring the fight to the capitalists and show them that we need to transition to a more socialist society. And so, yeah, it's interesting, Jackie, you bring up great questions. I think Wall Street Bets, anything that's going to fucking make the capitalists sweat, I'm all for it. Like I was cheering them on. I was like, this is awesome. But it's some way what we got to do is find out a way to bring together like all the anti-establishment crew. And I believe we need to, you know, do that on an economic agenda that empowers the working class, which is socialism. But because the capitalists have controlled this country since the very beginning, you know, I like to tell people all the time is we've never had a socialist president in this country. We've never had a socialist government in this country. And so this idea that you're scared of socialism is actually so irrational because every ill in society right now is a direct result of the system we have. And the system we have is not a socialist system. It is a capitalist system. So every ill in society is a direct result of capitalism. And so that's what we need to wake more and more people up to. But because they're so scared of socialism, because of the red baiting, you know, and because, you know, capitalists really write history, there's such a fear of it that we've got to find a way to kind of bring, you know, get everyone on our side and see that like, it's not so scary. It's just about giving people more power, not the government, not the Jeff Bezos, not the big corporations. And that left, that that's left to be remained seen. That's left to be remained. I'm stumbling on my words. It's left to see what, if that can happen. And I think the one who was the closest was a Bernie Sanders. And I think we're kind of waiting to see someone that can do that and also do it outside. I think if Bernie Sanders would have done this and ran in 2020 outside of the duopoly, I think he would have had a better chance. I think the hardest path is not the general election. It's getting past the DNC because they rigged their primaries against us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of want to answer that question too, Jackie, is that I don't know that we necessarily need another Luke Skywalker. Like, because I mean, even Luke Skywalker, he brought us Kylo Ren. So I don't know if we need...
Okay, the sequels didn't happen, okay?
But
Luke Skywalker went and helped Grogu, and that's all we know.
That's a good point, though, Meg. You're right.
And, but also, I don't think we need more Luke Skywalkers. I think we need more Han Solos. Like, people who are from the outside, because most of us are Han Solos. We're not paying attention to the Sith and the Jedi. We're just trying to hustle and make a living.
I'm Ahsoka Tano. I don't know about you two. I am 100%
Princess. I'm Princess Leia.
I am Team Ahsoka all the way. She saw this shit happen in, like, before the fall. She was like looking around like, oh, okay, I see how it is. So you bitches think that you're the shit, but you're not. And they were like, yo, come back. And she was like,
willing to throw me under the bus.
Hard pass. Yeah. So
I think Meg's onto something, though. Like, always waiting for another hero hasn't really worked out so well, especially a hero that's kind of like endorsed by the establishment.
I would just like to point out that Ahsoka is technically the one who started the resistance. Just saying. Still Team Ahsoka. Anywho.
I love Ahsoka.
She survived this whole thing. She started out in the prequels and she's in The Mandalorian and now she's going to have her own show because she's completely awesome. So yeah, hashtag Team Ahsoka.
Who else made it through the whole series? Didn't R2, D2 and 3CPO? Yeah. They've been killing it. They're still around.
Technically Grogu, because we found out he was, he's the same age as Anakin. And he was in the temple, but somebody helped him. Mm-hmm. Somebody hit him when Anakin was killing all the younglings.
Isn't he like 500 years old?
No, Grogu is 50.
Yeah.
50. But that's why he's like a baby, because Yoda's species ages differently.
God, I want to age like that. What are they, like, they age like 1 year every 100 years?
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't, because he's literally going to be a child for like a couple hundred years. Mm-hmm. And having everybody, like, he's literally, he's 50 years old. Din Djarin is like maybe 30. Mm-hmm. And Din Djarin is like older than him. So it's a very, like, no. Well, but that's because I'm the youngest. So I'm like, I don't need any more of that being a baby shit. I'm good. So anyway, but the punchline is Ahsoka Tano is awesome. And she saw all this shit coming. She got her white lightsabers, which is better than either the red or the blue or green. Mm-hmm. And
those are cool.
She rode this shit out.
Yeah, she became a great Jedi.
She would. She would have made a great Jedi, but she left the Jedi because she saw...
No, gray Jedi.
Oh, gray Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's, like, controversy over that because George Lucas says there's no such thing as a gray Jedi, and that's, like, a fan concept, and so whatever.
I don't care.
Okay, so she's a gray Jedi to you. So to
Meg, forget about George Lucas. What does he know?
Right. So to Meg, Ahsoka's a great Jedi, and to me, the sequels never happened. So
there you go.
What's your headcanon, Ryan? Let me guess. The prequels never happened.
Yeah. I didn't love. I like The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. The Force Awakens was good. The prequels. Excuse me. I thought you were talking about
any of them.
The prequels, I did not love the prequels. No, I thought those were the weakest, definitely the weakest link of all of them. I still think the original is nothing beats the original. It's so hard to pick. I mean, I know film buffs love Empire Strikes Back as their favorite. I just love The Return of the Jedi. It's those damn Ewoks. I think so. I go back and forth between The Empire Strikes Back and The Return of the Jedi, but the original is the best. I will say, though, The Force Awakens, that was the one film that got me kind of as excited as the originals. Mm-hmm. I'd say that's kind of the fourth one that really got me really going. And then also, obviously, the Mandalorian, I think, is fantastic. I think the storytelling is brilliant. Obviously, it's not as involved, but there's something to be said for just like the simple, the way it tells the story with just kind of, you know, Baby Yoda and the Mandalorian. It's so simple, yet it's complex, and it goes somewhere. And it just, I think it's really revived the Star Wars franchise. It got me so excited again. My partner, he's not a Star Wars fan, but I got him to watch The Mandalorian, and that was like awesome because like finally he's like, oh, okay. But yeah, the prequels were disappointing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's the thing I love about the Clone Wars, though, is that they kind of redeemed the prequels just a little bit. Because they do add so much nuance to it, which that's the thing that I love. And that's one of the reasons I do like Rebels, because that kind of goes on after Revenge of the Sith to kind of show you what happened in between. And that's just something that I like. But I mean, I at least liked a little bit of the nuance in the prequels. They were definitely not well executed, not in the least bit.
You know what? I can't stand Rebels because they had Obi-Wan, luckiest man in the galaxy, end up killing Darth Maul, the baddest bitch in the galaxy. And fuck that. Darth Maul's still alive. You understand? He's running the syndicate somewhere. Mm-hmm. He's still alive. So screw Rebels. Nope.
Darth Maul is pretty badass.
He is. He survived being cut in half only for freaking Obi-Wan. I can't stand Obi-Wan. By the way, controversial take. I hate Obi-Wan Kenobi in any iteration. Prequels, he's not in the sequels. OT, I don't like Obi-Wan. I've never liked Obi-Wan. Clone Wars, can't stand him. Anyway.
What about when Darth Vader says, Obi-Wan taught you well?
I love that line. Which is fine. Darth Vader is badass.
Yeah, like, Darth Vader is still my favorite villain in the entire...
In the movies, my favorite villain is Darth Vader. But in all of Star Wars, Revan. Revan has a way better story than Anakin did, which is a damn shame because, like, essentially the story of Star Wars is the story of Anakin. which is why the sequels don't exist, because there's no fucking Anakin in any of them. So they're not, they're just, they're a Star Wars story. There's some shit that happened over here. In my headcanon, the Yuuzhan Vong, they're the ones who came. It's not the Force Awakens, because that'd be stupid. You literally led a resistance to stop Palpatine, to essentially let another Palpatine rise. What was the point? You did it, nothing happened. You just, you're just like, oh, there's a power vacuum. I love this.
But isn't that kind of like, to bring it full circle, like that's exactly what's happening in American politics, right? Mm-hmm. What is the point, right? When yeah. both parties are owned by, you know, the giant corporations and the billionaire class, whoever wins the election every 4 years for president and every 2 years for Congress, doesn't matter which party wins, because the billionaires and the corporations have hedged their bets. They own both parties. So they win every election, right? And the people lose every election. And so while people, you know, some people claim we live in a democracy, I believe America's never been a democracy. I believe we are a, you know, a capitalist oligarchy, and where the people have very little say and control over their government and over politics and how it works. And I think that it's so hard for people to accept just that powerlessness that they really have over our politics. And so I think that's why they need this kind of false dichotomy, this kind of red blue thing. So it feels like they can have a little bit of control when they really don't have any. But the thing is if we ever want to get into a kind of a solution, and we ever want to have the kind of politics that would actually benefit the people and the planet, the first step in that is to get out of denial, right? And is to acknowledge that we live in an oligarchy, that both parties work for the ruling class and serve our capitalist system, and that we have to, you know, you have to admit that, and you have to accept your powerlessness in order to kind of to ever fight for something better. And I think people can never get out of that first step. I think that the red people are in denial about the Republican Party, and I think the blue people, you know, the blue mega and the liberals are in denial about the Democratic Party. And as long as they stay in denial, we're just going to be in this kind of pointless battle between two parties that don't really care about the planet or the people. And it's unfortunate. It's a lonely place to be, but at the same time, I think our job is to continue to wake people up and continue to fight, and also kind of get involved in organizations that are trying to build power for the people outside of the duopoly. And we do have parties that are trying to do that. You know, you have the Green Party, you have Socialist Alternative, you have the Party of Socialism and Liberation. You know, there are organizations, the People's Party is trying to do it. You know, there are people trying to build power. And I think we just have to keep chipping away and chipping away. And I think eventually it's going to crack. I think eventually the lie will be exposed, and the ruling class and both corporate parties will have nowhere to hide anymore. And people will finally see this nation for what it is. And that's what it's going to take for us to build a movement big enough to really kind of break the duopoly and break the oligarchy and build a multi-party democracy in this country. And that's what we need.
Okay, so this has just switched from Star Wars to The Matrix. Because basically what you just said was, and I say this all the time. So remember in The Matrix Reloaded, when Neo discovers that the problem is choice. All the crops of humans were destroyed because they kept waking up. And in order to keep people attached to the system, at least on any level, even if it's at a subconscious level, they have to be allowed to make a choice.
Right.
Because if they perceive that they have a choice, they'll accept the program and they will stay in the Matrix.
Right.
But if they know, if they don't have a choice, then they'll revolt against it and they'll wake up. And voting is that choice. Mm-hmm. Voting is the way for people to be allowed to stay in the Matrix and believe, well, as long as I vote, I have a say, I have a choice. And so then they just blindly accept it. So, and right. It's very much like you said, like blue pill, red pill. Well, either way, you're still in. Are you going to stay in the Matrix or come out of the Matrix? You have to make a choice. And most people don't realize that the choice, that they have the option of getting out of the Matrix, because it's on a nearly subconscious level.
Yeah.
And like even the people who don't vote, they're still attached to the Matrix, because also remember the rules of the Matrix are if you're in the Matrix, you're going to fight to stay in the Matrix. Because you're attached to it, and an agent can be, you can become an agent because they can jump into anybody who's attached to the Matrix. kind of like, you know, our heavily surveilled police state where anybody can be turned into a spy for the system. So, quick question. Hold on. So we're in a simulation. No, I'm just kidding. but like, I really feel like that's the case though, where like voting is that choice on an, on a near subconscious level where you're making the choice to stay attached to the system.
Right.
And as long as you're attached to the system, you can be used by the system to protect the system.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And whether you vote red or blue, I mean, it's a false choice. Both votes for, you know, a vote for the red team is a vote for the oligarchy, is a vote for our decrepit capitalist system, is a vote for imperialism, is a vote, you know, for the police state. Just like a blue vote is a vote for the oligarchy, is a vote for our decrepit capitalist system, is a vote for imperialism, and is a vote for the police state. I mean, they both are a vote to uphold the American empire. And the American empire works against its own people, and it works against people abroad. And yeah, we need, you know, what's sometimes interesting though, is we can get even people who have left the Matrix. We can sometimes, and I do this because I just left the Matrix, right? Probably a year and a half ago. I mean, this last election is the first time I didn't vote Democratic in my whole life. I could not vote for Trump, obviously, but I couldn't vote for Joe Biden either. Because in my head, it's the same choice. It's a choice to vote for an oligarchy. And I refuse to vote to live under an oligarchy where the rich keep getting richer and the poor keep getting poorer. And so I chose to vote green. But my point is even though I have left the Matrix, I can sometimes give the Matrix too much power. And that's how the Matrix stays in power, is by people thinking that there's no other possibility but, right, this two-party system, but to live under this oligarchy. And there was a poll out recently. Here's the hope. Here's the Luke Skywalker. Here's like
the Neo.
The one,
we need a Neo. We're in
here's the Neo. Here's like the good bit of news is that despite the fact that we have that we are the most, I would say the American people are the most propagandized people in the world. You know, right now our corporate media apparatus, we have six corporations now own 90% of the media outlets in America. That means that 90% of the information that people are reading and consuming is from six corporations, right? So that's how people stay in this little red blue matrix. But with that said, despite all of that, and despite all these hurdles we've talked about, there's a new poll out, and only 25% of eligible voters identify as Republican, 25% identify now as Democrats, and a record number, 50% of voters now identify as independent. And why that is important is because it shows that people are starting to wake up. And so we know that we have a universe of 50% of independents, and then we also have a universe of 100 million people who don't even bother to vote because they, you know, and a lot of people that are in the matrix shame those people, like, how dare you not vote? But nobody is smarter than poor and working class people. They know that no matter who they vote for, that their economic conditions don't change. So they say to themselves, why bother voting? So we have that universe of 100 million people, and we have the 50% of eligible voters who are now independents. And those are the people that we need to focus on to build power so that we can get to a place where we can kind of overthrow the matrix, right? And we can have a party and a movement that is about people power, not about oligarchy power, and not about corporate power. And that really is the only way to beat corporate power. The only way to beat the oligarchy and to beat the empire is with people power. And that's what we have to focus on, as depressing as it gets sometimes. So that to me is like our hero, is that there are people waking up and there are people who are saying, I don't want to be in the matrix anymore. And we need more of that. And we need to encourage that and get out of this kind of fear. You know, the way these two corporate parties, if you just look at their parties, each of them has a message of fear. The Republicans say that, you know, if you vote for Democrats, the Democrats are destroying America. And the Democrats say the same thing, that Republicans are destroying America. It's a fear. They use fear to control the masses. And what we're saying is, no, we're not buying your message of fear anymore. What we want is a nation where the people can succeed, not the ruling class, and where the people aren't exploited for the ruling class just to get richer and richer. This system needs to go. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye, system.
Yeah, and not even just the country, the whole world. Like, we need to have worldwide solidarity.
Yep.
Like, a whole bunch of us Han Solos, you know, coming together. Because, I mean, one of the things that I loved about Mandalorian is, like, okay, so we're seeing, what exactly is the big difference of being in the New Republic than it was during the Empire? Exactly. Is there really any difference for the rest of us? And that's exactly how it is right now. We're all living in the New Republic, apparently. And we're just like, okay, how's this any different than when we were under the Empire?
Exactly right.
How's this? We're still poor, hustling, and we had the guys on Cannobite getting rich. What about the rest of us?
It's the Wild West, at least in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I want to go back to The Matrix just because that's one of my favorite movies. But no, y'all want to talk Star Wars. So, okay, we'll talk Star Wars. I'm just kidding.
No,
I can talk Star Wars.
Meg just brought up you just brought up a good point. I mean, that is absolutely right, that things are not different under Biden.
Yeah, but she brought up Canto Bite, and that was in The Last Jedi. Like, y'all don't understand. I can't stand that movie. Okay.
So. I'm sorry. Just Canto Bite, come on. Just Canto Bite is a very good analogy, just because it's the idea that there are war profiteers profiting no matter who's in charge, either the new First Order or the Resistance. It doesn't matter who's in charge. They're still getting rich because they're selling weapons to both sides.
Yep. No matter who's in charge, the giant insurance companies are profiting off of, you know, our suffering and our diseases and our sickness. Mm-hmm. No matter who's in charge, the for-profit prison industry is profiting off locking up predominantly black and brown people.
Military-industrial complex.
Yeah. No matter who's in charge, you know, these CEOs and these giant corporations are making record profits by exploiting and underpaying their workers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the system that's the problem. And until we change the system, nothing will fundamentally change. And I think that is the most honest thing that Mr. Joe, I can't stand Biden, has said, is that when he told that room of Wall Street donors, oh, don't worry about me. You can invest big in me. You don't have to give Trump all your money this cycle. You can give me all that big money because nothing will fundamentally change for you when I'm in power. Now, the way it works is if nothing fundamentally changes for the people up here, for the billionaire class, then that means nothing fundamentally changes for the people down here, the poor and the working class.
Exactly.
And so that is why we have to get out of that mindset. And these people have to give up, because this nation, the poor and the working class and the black community and the brown community and marginalized communities have had to sacrifice everything just so these people up here could be so rich. And it's like, no, enough, enough. You know, we shouldn't, you know, the people shouldn't have to suffer anymore for just a few people to have more money than anyone could spend in one lifetime. And I think more people are waking up to that injustice, and that's a good thing for those of us who want to live in a more balanced society and want to bring balance to the force.
Well, the thing is, power concedes nothing. So they're not going to give up a damn thing. Mm-mm. We're going to have to take it.
That's right.
So what we really need, to bring it back to The Matrix, because that's what I do,
that's cool,
is a Smith. Because that's when the machines were willing to negotiate with Neo. When Smith took over the entire Matrix, and they were like, okay, there's something worse. We need to go with you to get rid of Smith. So we need a virus. Who wants to be a virus? We need a virus against capitalism.
I mean, I would call it, I mean, I don't like the word calling socialism a virus, but what I said earlier in the show is that I believe socialism is the antidote. But socialism terrifies the crap.
In order to get to socialism, we need to take down capitalism.
Right, but in a way, to the capitalists, socialism is a virus. To people like me, socialism is the antidote. So when you fight for socialism, it scares the bejesus out of the capitalists, because for them, they get their power from owning all the capital. And so if you can empower working class people and say, look, you've been lied to this whole time. Like, you think, you know, a lot of working class people think they're capitalists. Guess what? If you don't own capital, you're not a capitalist. You're just actually, you're getting your labor. You're the capital. You're getting your labor exploited to enrich your boss and to enrich the capitalists. And so for me, that is why the difference between fighting for kind of reform and fighting for revolution. Fighting for reform doesn't scare the capitalist class. It doesn't scare the billionaire class, because the Democrats have been kind of fighting for this quote unquote reform, which they're not even fighting for right now. But, you know, progressives have tried to fight for reform for 100 years in this country. And the billionaires have more power than they've ever had in this country. The capitalist class is richer than they've ever been. And so I think if we can get the workers all to get on board socialism, it'll scare the bejesus out of these capitalists. And I guarantee you we'd have social democracy tomorrow. Like, it would happen that fast if you could get millions of people demanding full-on socialism. It would scare the capitalists to hell. The problem is the capitalists own the media, and everyone's so terrified of socialism, so we can't get everyone on board of socialism.
And I think part of the problem with the education is people immediately want to say there's never been a successful socialist country. That's because the capitalists come in and take over.
That's right.
Capitalists won't allow a country that's socialist to stay, because it's just like what happened in World War II. Like, we decided to make the communists the enemy because we were like, well, if people like that, then they might start looking at us and saying, well, you know, capitalism doesn't work. So we have to make it fail. Even if it, like, whether or not it was going to fail on its own, we'll never know, because we, again, put our thumb on the scale to make sure it failed. And I think a lot of people don't realize that whenever we talk about, like, because as soon as you start talking about capitalism or even communism, people are like, there's never been a successful one, because capitalists won't let it happen.
Yeah. Socialism has never been given a chance to succeed without capitalism consuming it. And you can just look back and see, especially the United States government. I mean, every time a country tries to claim its own independence for the working class and elects a socialist and tries to build the socialist movement, the United States either goes in overtly or covertly and tries to overthrow that socialist government. Or it does what its favorite thing, which is to institute crippling economic sanctions on socialist countries, right? And puts up embargoes like it did with Cuba. And so, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's how the capitalist empire in the United States has maintained its global domination for the last 50, 60, 70 years. But I think we're coming to a point where, I think the chickens are coming home to roost, because, you know, it's like there's not going to be another country for them to exploit. And another, you know, at some point, you know, that's really the big flaw with capitalism, is that it assumes that there's infinite resources. Well, we don't have infinite resources, you know, so you can't have unlimited economic growth on a planet with limited resources. So at some point you will exploit the last person or exploit the last tree and exploit the last natural resource. Which is why, you know, a resource-based socialist economy is much more sustainable for the people and for the planet. But capitalists don't care about sustainability. They care about profitability. They care about giving themselves as many profits as possible in a very kind of psychotic way, when you factor in that they're... And I think one thing capitalists never realized, and I didn't either, is that people don't realize, and even kind of upper middle class people, that in order for them to consume the way they do, there's a lot of consequences because of that. And the consequences are, you know, the exploitation of the poor, the working class, communities of color, and also resources, you know, and now the climate crisis as well. And so that's never really factored in. And so because of that, I think we're coming to a place where it's just... all of a sudden, it's just not going to work anymore. The Matrix, we might not even have to expose the Matrix. The Matrix might expose itself, because that really was the big flaw, that these capitalists thought they could just keep consuming the planet. Well, eventually they'll consume the planet to death and there won't be anything left, right? So I think that gets into this point where people have to start asking bigger existential questions. Like, what was the point of all this? Was our whole purpose on Earth just to consume ourselves to death, you know, and destroy the planet that we've been given? And when you look at questions like that, and these kind of existential questions, you realize that, yeah, there's so much more to life than profitability, and that we need to have more balance, again, balance into the force, where you have to not just look at profitability, but also the sustainability of not just our planet, but of our species, of humanity itself. And these kind of core questions, as we continue to consume like this are going to be we're going to have to start asking these questions, and the capitalists are going to have to start answering for them as well. Because right now it's just like, oh, you're a capitalist. Oh, you've got all this money. Look at you. You got the big house. And we kind of, in a way, the way the Matrix stays in power is we worship, right? We worship the celebrities and the capitalists and the Steve Jobs of the world and the Donald Trumps of the world and the Rockefellers of the world. But in many ways, capitalism has maybe provided a lot of richness, some richness for some people. There's been a lot of destruction. We've destroyed a lot because of capitalism. And that's a big factor to all this.
Yeah, one thing that people don't seem to get about capitalism is that it's basically merchant feudalism.
Yeah.
So we may not have kings and queens and lords and ladies, dukes and duchesses anymore, but we still have an aristocracy. And they are the ones making money off of all of our labor. We live on their land. We work for them. We're not getting any share of this except for the middle school crumbs that they decide to drop off of their tables. That's all that it is. And it's funny that especially even some liberals and definitely Republicans, you know, they love to quote Margaret Thatcher of saying, you know, eventually you run out of other people's money. Well, eventually the planet runs out of resources, as you
Thank
just
you.
Said, Ryan.
Thank
it's,
you.
So you, it's like, okay, where then what exactly is the problem here? What are you trying to say? What are you trying to argue?
I think because that's why they're really trying to go to Mars. Like, seriously, I'm seriously like, look at Elon Musk. He's doing everything he can. He started a space program. I think they realize like, oh, this planet's fucked. Where's the closest one? Mars. Cool. Let's go there. Can we? Yeah.
And which is so fucked because like, you're just going to take the same psychotic capitalist thinking that destroyed this Earth, and you're going to take that whole thinking and bring it to another planet and then destroy another planet. And so that's where it's like, it's the greed. It's like at some point the people up here have to wake up and realize that what they're doing is not good. Like, it's not good for the planet. It's not good for the people. And that's why we need a revolution of thought, a revolution in the way we treat each other, a revolution in our economic systems, and moving away from this kind of an economic system that's dominated by greed and into an economic system that is about purpose and sustainability and is about, you know, maximizing each person's abilities in the society, not about maximizing one person's bank account. And I think that it scares me. Jackie, you're right, though. They are trying to go to Mars, and they'll just take the same capitalist thinking there, and the way they're just going to keep destroying planets. And it's like this virus. And I think in many ways that it's like the evolution of our species. It's like somewhere along the lines, it's like the one thing that will destroy the human race is that we miss the compassion component or the courage component. Like, we just didn't have enough courage to evolve beyond, you know, a species that just wants to take from the planet and not give back. Right. And, you know, you see in the earth, you know, trees give back. They plant little saplings so they grow other trees around them. Humans aren't doing that. They give us oxygen. We're just take and consume. And it gets to a point where like, what's the point of all this? But you go on, Jackie, you're right. It's terrifying. They're going to go to Mars and bring this evil system to Mars.
Elon Musk is Galactus. he's a planet eater.
He's a planet eater. Didn't he say something about like he wanted human slaves to go to like to take to Mars?
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Wasn't that like he didn't say slaves, but basically like he wanted free human labor.
We can coup whatever governments Mars. We want.
Yeah.
And that's where Meg is right. That. This is capitalism has turned is like neo-feudalism, because instead of like, you know, Queen Elizabeth, we just have, you know, King Bezos and King Musk. Mm-hmm. You know, the billionaires are now the new kings and queens, and they control and dominate this earth, and they're not using their power for good. And I think that is the saddest part to me. Like, they could, you know, if they wanted to use their power for good, first of all, like they would like, and they could support politicians that like actually want to do good, but that's not what they do. They, you know, both all the billionaires buy off the two parties that just want to write laws that favor the billionaire class and give them tax breaks instead of write laws that are good for the working class and good for the people. And so it's so, we're so far away from anything that resembles true dignity and justice in this country and in this world. And it's a shame. It kind of feels overwhelming at times.
That might be why so many people are depressed and have anxiety and there's so many addictions, because humans are part of an ecosystem.
Right.
But we have become so obsessed with being the apex predator that we have ignored the fact that we have, that we're supposed to have like a symbiosis. You know, we're supposed to be, you take, but you give.
Right.
Like, we don't even give back to the soil. It used to be when we died, you know, we were buried into the ground and then your body essentially became fertilizer for what comes next. Now we put ourselves in boxes. We don't even give back when we die. Like, we have completely separated ourselves from our environment and each other. Now we live in apartments and houses that separate, and we stay in those apartments and houses as opposed to like going out. Like, when I was
part
of
the community.
Yeah. When I was a kid, there used to be block parties like every weekend. You go outside. Like, you didn't have to worry about babysitters because somebody in the neighborhood would just watch all the kids. Like, if you had to go to work, somebody else would watch them. And then when somebody else needed to go to work, you would watch them. And it was a community, and we don't really have that anymore. We're just a bunch of individuals that are suspicious of each other and paranoid and blaming each other for different things. And I think that's where a lot of addictions come from. That's where a lot of anxiety and depression comes from, because we're not connected anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're all taught that, like, we're all competing against each other. It's that individualism, right? And there's no thought about the greater collective and about. And I love what you said, Jackie. You're right. Like, I think capitalism has just completely disconnected us from the planet. It's disconnected us from each other, from our communities. And we're all just like competing and trying to outdo each other. And at some point people have to be like, what are we competing for? We're essentially, because what's happening under this decrepit capitalist system is we're just competing to annihilate the planet and the people and our species. That's what this competition is about. Look where this is going, people. You know, and so we've got to get out of that thought and at least balance out that thought and realize that our purpose is not, we're not here to outdo each other. We're here to help each other. We're here to heal each other. We're here to connect with each other. To experience each other, to connect with the planet, and that to me is what's really sad. Is capitalism teaches us not to connect, not to help, teaches us to get out of my way. You know, I got to go get mine. You know, it teaches us that, and then you know, then you add in kind of the social media element, and I know people like us, we use social media for the movement and to help connect like-minded individuals, but. You know, I see a lot of my old friends, they use social media to kind of be like, look at this, look at my amazing vacation, look at my amazing house, look at my amazing wardrobe, you know, and look at me. And it becomes this, like, that just feeds into the individualism and into the capitalism. And then people go on social media and they're like, oh no, my friend got this, or my friend went on this vacation. My friend got this promotion. I haven't gotten that yet. And you're absolutely right, Jackie. Then that's where the depression comes in, the addictions come in, because the message they get is, well, then if I don't have all that, if I didn't get the promotion, if I didn't get the house, if I didn't get, you know, the nice vacation, then I must not be good enough, you know, and which is a false message. You know, we are all enough. We are all here. We're all here for a reason. And I believe that reason is to connect and to help each other. But when you're living in the rat race and you get so consumed with it, I've seen it happen to me. I mean, I'm a recovering addict. I've been sober 10 years now, but the drugs almost got me. And it was because I was in the rat race. So what Jackie says, you bring up a very good point, Jackie, that capitalism in many ways has just disconnected us from what our primary purpose really is. And I would say our primary purpose is not to make millions of dollars, but to actually just kind of, you know, give back to this world and give back to each other. And unfortunately, that's not kind of what I'd say is happening right now overall. I think we're all kind of in these bubbles and fighting and competing and destroying each other.
Mm-hmm. And Marx made that argument about alienation. Right. That's what capitalism does. It alienates us.
Right.
It alienates us from each other and alienates us because we're so specialized in everything that we're alienated from each other, from our product. That's the whole issue of what he was talking about. That's why we need to own the means of production, because we're separated from those things. What we don't see the product of our labor, then we don't understand what it is that we're doing. Like, what is the point of all of this?
Right.
So we have to end that alienation. We do have to connect. We have to collaborate rather than compete. Otherwise, we are going to kill each other for this little rat race that we're all fighting for.
I mean, that's what we're doing. We're constantly in war.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, we have troops all over the world. We're killing each other. And the military bases. Like, the military today. 800
military bases that America has over the world.
Mm-hmm. Like, the U.S. government sent out the National Guard just in case. We're at war. We're at war with ourselves. We're at war with everybody.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. I agree. We need to do something. So, final question is, do you guys think that we can have a peaceful revolution, or do you think that it is going to be either going to go the way of Rome, or like ancient Rome, or like France or Russia, or do you think this is going to, it's going to require something like some kind of catastrophic global event similar to the Black Plague to like wipe out a majority of humanity to make everybody come back together, like to be a nerd again, to just jump into another thing. In Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we discovered that during the 5 years of the blip after Thanos' snap, there were no borders. Everybody came together because it was literally half of the planet was gone. So everybody was like, okay, let's all come together. And the world was much different during that 5 years than it was prior, when everybody was fighting each other and there was war. Once everybody was gone, they realized, hey, we're all in this together, and we're just the human race.
One people, one world.
Flag Smashers motto. So what do you guys think? How do you guys think that it'll play out?
I'm going to quote Castro here. I think it can only be violent. I don't think there is a way to peaceful revolution. I don't know that there is.
I would say that for a couple things that, you know, we just had one of the worst pandemics in modern history unfold over the past year and a half. And if there was an external event that should have really woken up America and seen, you know, that this decrepit capitalist system is not serving the majority of the people and just continues to serve the billionaire class, and that we need to kind of shift our society into a society that is sustainable, and into a society that we're into an economy where that works for everyone. But that is not what happened during the pandemic. You know, it could have been a great opportunity for that to happen. And what ended up happening was what always happens under capitalism when there's a crisis or a catastrophe. The ruling class uses the crisis and catastrophe. And both corporate parties in Washington use the crisis and the catastrophe to further funnel profits up to the billionaire class. And we saw that happen in 2008 after the big financial crisis. The very banks that crashed the market got huge bailouts, and the working class just, you know, didn't get anything. And we saw here in this pandemic, you know, with the CARES Act, had a lot of care for the billionaire class, had very little to no care for the poor and the working class. And we saw just another consolidation of wealth up to the billionaire class happen. So it's just, for me, a couple things. I think that we have to stop allowing the most violent government in the history of the world, which is the United States government, which has 800 military bases throughout the world, which drops thousands and thousands of bombs on other nations on an annual basis. There was a report, you can Google this, that since World War II, the United States Empire has killed through either war or through crippling economic sanctions, which starve many poor and working class people, is responsible for 30 something million deaths. So we have to stop this. It's just amazing to me when one of the most violent empires in history tries to kind of clutch its pearls, right? And after, you know, when after the latest black man was murdered a week ago by the police, Joe Biden went out and he said, well, we better have peace tonight. You know, no looting. It just amazes me that the empire, who is literally looting the poor and the working class, both at home and abroad, and that these giant corporations and billionaires get to loot the wealth from the poor and the working class to enrich themselves, that they get to go feign outrage over some violence when they're the ones committing the violence. So first of all, I want to make that point. But I would agree. I think that if there was any chance for peaceful revolution, it would have been what Bernie was doing. That's what Bernie was trying to do from 2016 until now.
And we're never going to let it happen.
And who stopped Bernie? And this is a point we have to make over and over again. It was not the Republican Party that stopped Bernie Sanders. It was the Democratic Party. It was the party that claims to be Democratic, that claims to be against voter suppression. The party that claims to be, you know, against voter suppression, turns out they rig their own primaries. Turns out they sue to get third parties like the Green Party off of ballots, to get kicked off of ballots. And they propose legislation like the For the People Act, which is supposed to be against voter suppression. Turns out it's really the, I call it the For the Duopoly Act, because what it does is it actually suppresses voter choice. It makes it harder for third parties to be viable and to reach the fundraising threshold. So if we were going to have a peaceful revolution, it would be through our political process. Well, guess what? When both corporate parties are owned by the giant, by the corporations and the billionaires, there's no beating. And there's no beating these corporate parties through a political way, because they've rigged the system in their favor. They own the media apparatus. They own the information streams. Mm-hmm. So with all that said, the revolution, at some point, there could be some violence. But I will guarantee you this, there will be no more violence committed than has been committed against poor and working class and brown and black and indigenous people throughout this country's history. So I think that that's really the question we have to ask. I think that every day this government, these two corporate parties reign over us, these billionaires reign over us, is a day of violence. They are committing violence against us every single day. And what's really sad to me, I'm learning lately, is we don't see all the violence, right? Because the violence they're committing is the person who just got kicked off their healthcare, right? Who's now suffering in silence and can't go see their doctor because they can't afford to. The violence is the bombs that are dropped in the Middle East, because the United States is trying to hoard other nations' oils, right? The violence happens when, you know, you pay, you know, someone $7.25 an hour, and when they should be making $24 an hour. And so they can't, they're having to pick between, okay, do I pay my rent or my light bill, or do I get enough food so I can feed my three children? That's violence. Right? The oligarchy and both of these capitalist parties commit violence against the poor and the working class every day. And they also commit violence against the poor and the working class abroad through these endless wars. And so I believe that we need to rise up against the violence that's perpetuated onto all of us. And I think, sure, would it be great if that was peaceful? Absolutely. But I also believe now that we're at a point where there's so much violence committed against the poor, the working class, and marginalized communities every day, that we need to come together and overthrow this corrupt system by any means necessary. And so, you know, that's just going to be what it is. And it's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. I think the biggest barrier to progress in our country right now are comfortable liberals, because that, you know, they're what you said earlier, Meg, is so right, that the Democrats don't, you know, they're not reformers or revolutionaries, they're managers. Mm-hmm. A lot of these liberals, they're kind of like the managerial class, right? They're like the manager at their company or whatever. They've got enough money in the bank. They've got enough, you know, and when you've got healthcare and when you've got enough money in the bank, sure, turn it on the TV and hearing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris spouting these empty platitudes at you, that's enough. But if you're a poor working class person and you can't afford healthcare and you can't afford enough food to feed your family and you can't afford to pay the rent every month, you don't give a shit about empty platitudes on TV. You're like, where is my Medicare for all? Where is monthly UBI? Where is a $24 an hour living wage that I can go work so I can provide for my family? That's what 140 million Americans who are poor or working class, that's what they're saying. They don't give a shit about these platitudes on TV that these, you know, Democratic politicians spout to try to, you know, sedate the masses. And so, you know, the comfortable liberals who are just so happy with the, you know, the Obamas and the Buttigieges and the Kamalas and the Bidens of the world, they're to me the most complicit. And I say that as someone who used to be very comfortable. Mm-hmm. I say that as someone today. I am very comfortable, not because of what I do, but because my partner, you know, he's successful. And that gives me the ability to be a grassroots activist, to not really, you know, I don't really have an income. I mean, my podcast makes $400 a month. People call me a grifter every month. And my boyfriend's like, how are you a grifter? Your podcast doesn't make any money. But my point is I used to be the comfortable liberal. You know, I did have a corporate job in my 20s. I used to work in corporate finance. I was comfortable. And when I was comfortable, guess what? I didn't care about poor and working class people. Mm-mm. You know, I just cared about myself. I was selfish. And it wasn't until I woke up and realized that comfort I used to enjoy was because I was complacent, because it was my lack of empathy, because I didn't care. And these comfortable liberals have got to get out of their bubbles and their echo chambers, because their comfort comes at the cost of all these people. The richest nation on earth? How are we the richest nation on earth when half of our people are poor or low income? You know, and so that's, unfortunately, it's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable, but that's how change happens. Change doesn't happen when people are comfortable. It happens when they're uncomfortable. So we have to, you know, keep making people uncomfortable and not backing down and not compromising. You know, what are we getting from compromising with the Democratic Party? We get nothing. They give us nothing. Bernie got nothing from supporting Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
as I like to say, you don't change the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party changes you.
That's right.
Exactly. Well, thank you guys for coming today. Thank you to my awesome host, Killjoy Meg. Thanks for joining us, Ryan. And
thank you for having me.
No problem. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Proud Socialist, and you can download my podcast for free on any major podcast platform. It's just called Amped Up with Ryan Knight. I have a great episode with the one and only Jackie Poles that just posted 3 days ago. And Jackie talks
about a great episode. I loved it.
She talks about the policing system and why it can't be reformed. We talk about why capitalism can't be reformed. And we also kind of talk about one thing I thought was so interesting. We kind of get into the fact that so often from a socialist perspective, we talk about socialism liberating the poor and the working class. We kind of talk about how the people up here who think that they're free, they're really not. And that socialism actually liberates the people who make a living off exploiting others. And that, you know, nobody needs to have that much wealth. So it's a cool episode. And thank you, Jackie, for coming on.
Thanks for returning the favor. Thanks for inviting me as well. And Meg, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at KilljoyMeg.
Awesome.
That's a good handle.
See you guys. You. See you guys later. Thanks.
May the force be with you, Master.
May the force be with you.
May the force be with you.
May the force be with us all.